listening to Rad Radio.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Rad Radio. Tonight, we have Reese Bulber from Conjure One Delirium and Frontline Assembly. Before we go on air, I have to tell everybody that I have a little cold tonight. So if you hear me sniffling, I'm not riding the cocaine train. I'm not pulling a Donald. I just have a little bit of a cold. Anyway, Reese, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm great. You had me sweating there for a minute, buddy. I didn't know if you were going to make it on time.
Oh, well, my phone, I think, is 2 minutes off because it was 5:59 here.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously?
I thought I was
we're
early.
We're here. Tell everybody where you – I know. I went live without you, and then I saw your number. I saw you calling in, and I was like, oh, click.
Okay, cool.
So you're in Los Angeles tonight. In the studio.
I am. I'm in
all
the
right.
valley
How's
in the
going?
Studio. Yeah, I'm just getting ready for the shows with my overcomplicated live setup. I'm trying to still figure out. So, you know,
that's right. You're touring, so, right?
Well, I'm doing 7 shows. If that's a tour, it's like a mini tour.
Well, it counts. I think it counts. And I know you're going to be in Palmer Lake, Colorado, on the 8th.
Yes.
Next week.
Wherever that is, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because it's not too far from where I live.
It looks like a nice place. It's like it's an arts center, which is a lot nicer than a dingy club. So kind of looking forward to it. It was actually the first show offer, and then it built the rest of the shows around it. So it sort of started the whole thing.
Tell me a little bit about what this show entails, what these 7 shows are about, and everybody listening.
Well, I have a project called Conjure One, which is, I don't want to call it a solo project because it's, you know, there's other people involved, there's other guests and collaborators, but it's sort of like something I started doing when I kind of stepped away from Frontline and got more into producing and then just wanted to start making music again. And so I was living in Europe, putting some music together, and it sort of became what is now Conjure One. And this is the 4th album, and I have a new label, Armada, which is actually more of a dance label in Holland. And I just wanted to do some shows to kind of promote the record. I'm happy with the album a lot, and I enjoy playing it live, so... That's basically
yeah,
what it is.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I have a singer with me. It's basically me and a bunch of my devices and some keyboards and a singer, and that's what it is.
Okay. Your idea of devices and my idea of devices are 2 different things. Just, you know, my dad's going to love that comment, by the way. But... So you're doing this 7 show kind of mini tour, and where will you be playing besides Colorado?
We start in Vancouver, my hometown, and then we go to Portland and Seattle, and then we go to Palmer Lake, then Salt Lake City, Los Angeles, San Francisco.
So it's kind of a West Coast tour. Kind of
yes.
It just does. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where
it's easier to get around.
People are. Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know. We'll find out.
I think you'll really enjoy Colorado. I mean, I love it. The people here are great.
We always had good shows there with Frontline and Delirium. Denver was always a good show as far as I could, you know, going way back now. It was never disappointing. So, you know, we'll hope for more of that.
Now, Palmer Lake is south of Denver, I would say 40 minutes, maybe, south of Denver.
Okay.
If I had to guess, which is south of me, and I'm south Denver, and I think you're probably about 30 minutes from me, maybe 20. I am not really sure, because to be honest with you, I have not been to Palmer Lake. You know, I think it's right
it looks
between
nice.
Like Denver and Colorado Springs.
Yeah, it looks nice, and it's the only problem with playing there is I have to go to the airport. I have to go to the Denver airport, which is like my least favorite airport in America.
Oh, it's horrible. It is so, and then so
it's always rough landing there.
Oh, I know. It's the wind, really. The wind is horrible.
Yeah, it's not a fun place to.
How do you get from the airport to the venue, which is so far away? I mean, how are you pulling that one off?
Someone's picking me up, as far as I know.
If you're getting
as far
trouble,
as I know,
call
someone's
me.
Picking me up. So hopefully it works out. No, the people putting the show together are really together and nice. And so there'll be a motorcade, I guess, to take us to the show.
A motorcade. You probably have to go right by my house to get there. I'll wait
yeah.
when you go by. Yeah. No, but really, I had a chance to listen to the album. It's Holocenic. And
yes.
It's very, very much along the lines of what I think Delirium does.
Wow, what a coincidence.
I mean, I don't know
the
how
same
that
person
happened,
working
but...
on it. I mean, it kind of it's inevitable. You know, it's inevitable.
It's the
main difference I think between Conjure and Delirium is sort of the how do I describe it? It's like the approach I think is different, and the it's sort of like I think with Conjure One it's almost like this it's a little more personal and it's like the songs more have specific themes, whereas Delirium is a little more of a broad, like a general.
Mm-hmm.
Delirium is a bit more like how do I describe it? It's a bit more like a brand, maybe. You know, it's like we kind of know what it is and how to put it together. And I think the Conjure One stuff's a little bit more like introspective and personal. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. I mean, musically they have a lot in common, but I think the way that they're the process is different. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Right. Yeah. Did you write all the songs on the album yourself?
Well, I write the music and then the singers write the melody and the lyric usually. I mean, sometimes I manipulate some of what they did as well, but in general I write the music and then I collaborate with different singers and they write their melody and lyric. So It's like anything with vocals is usually a co-write.
So who's on the album and who do you have touring with you?
Well, the singer I have touring with me is not on the record, but she co-wrote one of Conjure One's more popular songs called Tears from the Moon. She was actually the co-writer on that. And she was in she's from Belgium. She was in, her name's Kyoko Bartson, and she was in a group called Lunascape, and she also used to sing in a group called Hooverphonic. And every time I do shows in Europe, she is the singer. And we've kind of done a lot of shows now, and she wanted to come and play some American dates, so she's going to come and join me for these shows. She's very good.
Okay, well, what is her name again? Did you tell us?
Kyoko.
Kyoko. Okay.
Yes.
Did not catch that. I apologize.
Yeah.
So, how did you find this? How did you find her? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I did a song called Tears from the Moon. I was working with some songwriters in LA, and they played me the song and thought it would be a good fit for Delirium or for myself. And so I did a version of the song. What I didn't know is that Kyoko and her group had already recorded it. They didn't tell me that. And so I think we sort of got in touch in a roundabout way because of that. You know, actually, I'm trying to remember how we got in touch. I think that was how we got in touch eventually. So, and then I just started using her for mainly the live dates. And we've yet to do something in the studio, but I think that day will come.
It's so funny how that happens, because I think a lot of times, especially in the entertainment industry, it's always most times a matter of, you know, somebody who knows somebody, or you connect that way.
It's not a small world.
It is. It's crazy.
Show business is a very, very small world of people. Everything's connected by just a couple people usually. So it was, you know, it's easy to connect a few. You know, even going way up the ladder, it's never hard to connect a few people together. So.
Right. And it was surprising, because when I started radio, and I, from personal experience, when I was considering getting into radio, which is part of the entertainment industry, and I thought, well, how the heck am I going to do this, right? How am I going to get guests? Where do I even start? And really, it's just a matter of knowing, it's like that whole 6 degrees of separation deal. You know one person, and then you know everybody.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works.
Yeah, sort of like creative fields are very much insular worlds. So.
I know. It seems like the pool's getting a little smaller this year, too. 2016 has not been kind to us.
Yeah. It's not good for music either.
I mean, I'm just saying everybody's like, I know, everyone's like dying. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's like, I sound like a crazy...
Well,
conspiracy theories,
what it is,
like GMOs or what?
No, it's the anything creative has been made so much more accessible to so many more people that now everyone is a record producer, a recording engineer, you know, a radio or podcaster. I mean, everything's become so accessible that it's sort of diminished the demand for people that specialize in those fields. Same with photography and design. It's mainly, I think, just the accessibility of the instruments required. Like, you know, 20 years ago, if you wanted to record a record, you had to know a recording engineer and get into a studio, and now you can do it on your computer. So it's sort of changed the way a lot of things work. And not necessarily for the better, because it means you just have a lot of people hacking around rather than people who perfected the craft.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your opinion of that was. If you thought it was a good thing or a bad thing. I think
it's both.
Personally, I think it depends.
It's both. It's a good thing because it gets more people involved in you know, things. But it's also a bad thing because it's eliminated the development, the way stuff was developed over time and nurtured is like sort of been removed, because now everyone fast tracks their way through everything. And I don't think it's that part of it, I don't think is good.
Right. And I kind of think that I agree with you. I mean, there's a craft there. So, you know, we're exposed to a lot of junk right now, but occasionally there is someone who kind of rises above and stands out, you know, who we maybe wouldn't have found without the advent of technology.
Well, that's what we tell ourselves. But usually I find, like sports, if someone's good at something, someone notices. So, you know, I'm not sure that's totally the case, because, you know, anyone who, you know, a few people slip through the cracks, but in general, when someone's really good at something, people start noticing, and that sort of develops it from there.
Right, exactly. I agree. And speaking of being good at things, I did listen to both albums before the show tonight, and I really just thought they were both amazing, just really incredible.
Cool.
And
appreciate that.
Yeah, and there is a song that we're going to play here in a few minutes from Holocenic, and it's called Ghost. And
yes.
I would like for you guys, you know, to hear this in a couple minutes. But first, I would like for you to tell us all about it. Tell us about
a little
song.
Bit about Ghost.
Tell us, yes.
Okay, Ghost is a cool song. It's probably one of my favorites on the record. the way it came about was it was actually a songwriting session for another singer named Curly, who's an Estonian singer who was on a big record label for a while. Her name's spelled with a K. And
yes, I know her.
So, yeah, so Curly was at my studio with another British songwriter I work with named Victoria Horn, and the three of us were just trying to write a tune for her, for Curly. And the song started developing. I mean, I just had a basic map of music I just kind of slapped together. And we started, you know, they started writing a vocal and a melody to it while I was kind of developing the music all in the same room. And we sort of put together just like a verse and a chorus, and that was it. And then I kind of just worked it from there and turned it into a fully formed song. And I can't remember what the deal with the song was. Like, maybe Curly didn't think it was the right direction. I said, well, I really think this is good. You know, can I cut this for my record? And then it just went from there. And then something to do with record company commitments, or, you know, Curly had actually originally sang the song and she wasn't able to be on the record. So I needed someone who had a similar range voice. And my wife actually suggested Christy Thirsk, because she has a high register voice. And so we got Christy, who sang on a lot of Delirium, and
right,
to come in and recut the vocal, even though there are some of Curly's background vocals still on there, unbeknownst to probably a lot of people. And that's where the song came from. And it's, I think it's a beautiful lyric Victoria and Curly put together. And I'm very happy with that song.
It is a really beautiful song. I mean, I love it. And when I said I know
Thank
Curly,
you.
I don't mean like I know her
personally.
Well.
No,
we
you
met
know who she
passing.
Is. Yeah, she,
right.
Yeah, she
we
was
met
on,
passing once.
She was on Island Def Jam, I think. She was on a big label.
Mhm.
And she's
yeah,
very
I
cool. She's a real
event.
Character. Yeah, she's very, you know, cool, interesting person and a character. And her personality
mm-hmm.
still is in the song. So that's it's great.
Well, I think if you're game, we're going to go ahead and play
yeah.
Ghost from the Holosthenic album by Conjure One.
Yeah,
all
I'm
right,
ready.
Let's take a listen. Just All right, that was Ghost by Conjure One on the Holoscenic album. And it's a lovely tune, lovely tune. All right, moving on, let's talk about, I know everyone has been bugging me about this, let's talk about Delirium and the new Mythology
okay.
album that dropped on Friday.
Yes.
What
would you like to know?
Well, here's the thing. Okay, it dropped on Friday, and you guys were number five within, what, 3 days?
Yeah, that
right
doesn't really mean
that?
Very much, though. It just means all the initial fans go and buy it right away because there's so few records sold now. To get into a chart like that doesn't require that many sales because it's when the fans of a project all run out and buy it right away, you get a big spike. So that's like, it looks more impressive than it technically is. That's just today's music business.
Really? You know, I don't make music, so I don't know how that works, but it's
yeah,
a whole lot different in radio.
Yeah.
And so
it's easier to get on charts now than it used to be because the numbers are all so much smaller.
So do you look mostly for longevity? Is that what you're like, oh, I'm checking to see if we're, well, you
I
know,
think
I
it's
mean,
important.
You don't have to check the charts because you're getting a check, but. So.
Well, I think it's important to make music that doesn't date too easily. I think if you know you're making good music, if it can still sound good in 10 plus years, that's what I'm always hoping for and trying for. The result is not up to me to decide, but that's what I'm trying to do when I make records is make something that won't date as badly as some. I mean, we have made some stuff that, you know, some of the old industrial stuff doesn't sound great now. Very much of the time, but you know, nowadays it's, you know, I like to think we've gotten better at making records and can make things that, you know, can hold up over a longer period of time. So that's kind of how I gauge stuff. You know, the slow burn approach is not a bad thing, you know.
So what do you think the biggest difference is between making music now and when you first started out?
Well, other than the industry things I mentioned earlier, I think the difference now is, at least for myself, is I do way more jobs than I used to. Like now, I'm also an engineer and a mixer, and, you know, before I used to just work on the music, and then we'd have engineers and mixers and things kind of polish it all up, but now it's kind of like I do all of that. Which is kind of cool on one hand because it's good to like be able to and have more skills. But on the other hand, it's just a lot of work and it's really time consuming. And, you know, if you look at it like a regular job, you're sort of doing more for the same, if you want to be cynical
right.
about it. But that's the biggest difference is like now you really have to do way more than you used to. Like I have a studio and, you know, when bands come to me, cause you know, I do a lot of work as a producer. And now when bands come to me, I literally do everything, you know, like before we'd be in studios and there'd be engineers and assistants and all this stuff. And now it's just me in my place. So that's the biggest difference, I would say. And also now we have way more equipment. Like I have so much more equipment than I used to. When we first started, we only had a couple things. And I sometimes think that less is more. I think when you have a lot of stuff, it's a bit of a distraction, you know.
Have you guys thought about doing a stripped-down album?
Kind of impossible. That's just not going to happen because, you know, you put out all these records sounding the way they sound, and then you want to do the, quote, stripped-down album, and everyone's going to be like, you know, what happened, you know? It's kind of hard. We did an acoustic record, a Delirium acoustic record that was about stripped-down as we could probably go, and that was still fairly produced, so... You know, we did the one thing like that where we tried to make it as sort of, you know, technically not totally acoustic, but more of an acoustic approach. And I think that actually worked out quite well.
Now, I have it on good authority that you guys were down to the wire on making Mythology. And And tell us a little bit about that, because I know you guys were cutting it close.
It was finished quite a while ago.
Well, okay, then I didn't think it was that long ago.
Well, we finished
maybe a couple months.
No,
right?
We finished it a while ago. I think what it was it was taking a really long time, and we had to get it wrapped up. Like it had been a few years, before it all finally came together. And so earlier this year it was like, listen, we got to get this record finished. This is like taking way too long. And so in that aspect, it was, for whatever reason, these records take a really long time to make. And I think a lot of it is, Bill is in a different city. Oh, he came down here for the initial sessions and then came down here again. And then we're always trying to find the right vocalists, and that takes time. And then, when you find the right vocalist, you have to like fit with their schedule, and that takes time. So it just all compounds into, a lengthy ordeal, So I think the case with this record was we really got to finish this. This has been, 2-3 years since we started this. So that was kind of where it went.
And so when you guys were making this record, was it really a collaboration? Who wrote the majority of the songs, and where did the inspiration come from?
Well, Bill came down here and we kind of sketched out a bunch of songs, and then a couple of the songs came from Bill and his frontline guys. They had worked on a couple tunes up there, and they sent those down to me, and I kind of did my thing on them. And then Bill and I wrote a bunch of tracks when he came down here as well. And then we just sort of figured out, what's what. This song would be good with the singer. This song will keep instrumental. And I don't really know. When I do stuff with Bill, we really just get in a room and just start bashing stuff out. We don't really have any. Initially we're going to make a darker record, and it just, didn't happen. It just turned into, what it is. It's hard to say. A lot of times when you set out to do something, it just evolves and, acquires its own personality, and you just end up following it. And that's sort of what happened with this. Initially we wanted to make some dark, old school kind of gothic tinged record, and we wrote no songs like that. So it turned into what it is. And then we got introduced to a singer named Jess late in the project, and she does a lot of dance records. She's had some success, and she brought in two songs that were really fully formed ideas that we just sort of slightly deliriumized. Stay and Once in a Lifetime were the two songs that they probably sound a little different because they kind of came from Jess and her programmer. And, we kind of did our delirium touch to them, but, they were started by her and her team. And so it's just like a collection of, really different kind of ideas. And, but I know, I think Bill might have said we were going to make a darker record because it's on Metropolis and all these things, and it just fully did not happen. And it wasn't intentional. It just evolved into, like I said, delirium has become kind of a thing. And it, once you start working on it, going, we're working on delirium, it sort of retains its personality, I guess you could say.
Right, but it's still, it's very... I don't know what the word I'm looking for here. Ethereal, perhaps?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. That's like the sound, It's like,
yeah.
We always make sure it is like that, And we also chose some singers who, Mimi Page, who's on four of the tracks, her own music is very ethereal as it is. So we thought she would be a great fit to bring in. And again, a couple of those songs were ideas she already had that we sort of adopted and then added a couple of our parts to and things like that. So we sort of, you know, went that way, you know. We, like I said, we wanted to almost do more of an indie type, ethereal, darker sound. And, you know, and then we got, you know, songs like Stay and stuff with Jess. They're much more slick and commercial and kind of like what Delirium has become. So, like I said,
right,
it just,
it's classic Delirium.
It retained its own personality, you know.
Yeah. Now, the big question I'm getting, which I'm sure you are too, is that everyone wants to know if there are plans for a tour anytime soon.
Well, that's a tough one because touring with Delirium requires, you know, there's a lot of things involved. And, you know, it's getting a lot of people coordinated and ultimately it's expensive. And it really sort of is one of those things where we have to see if it makes sense, because those other tours we did were, you know, decent sized productions. So that's sort of the biggest, I think that's the thing a lot of people don't fully, you know, realize is, you know, there's a lot of factors involved in that. You know, there's just, you know, the bookings and if there's enough interest and hype behind the record for people to be excited about it, and just the, you know, just the whole undertaking of getting a bunch of people together and on point like that. It's something we sort of have to see what happens with the record. I mean, the way I've gone with Conjure One is a little more intimate and a little more like personal, like the music, which is again the kind of the difference between the two. So I can do smaller shows and it sort of makes sense within what it is. But, you know, with Delirium, we've sort of cultivated this thing. So we have to approach the production that way. And that's, you know, not as simple. So it's something we have to wait and see what happens with all that. It's not just like, you know, throw a couple things in a van and head out there. There's a lot of other parts to it.
Right. I understand that. I think that a lot of people probably think, well, you know, the record label will worth the tour, but it really does depend on how well the album
the
does.
Label's
so if you guys
gonna...
want, huh?
It depends if the record label feels like losing a lot of money.
I know, right? Well, that's what I was about to say. If you guys want a tour, go buy the album. You got to support the album to get the tour.
That's just the reality of how stuff is. I mean, I think we're going to do some festivals in Germany. I think we're going to do some of those. You know, we just have to see. You know, we have to see. You know, the thing about tours is it's not up to us, you know. It's up to other people. It's up to agents. It's up to, you know, promoters. It's a whole other thing behind touring. It's not as simple as, yeah, we're just going to go on tour. It has to be like coming from other people. I mean, we'd always like to play the songs live, but it's not really up to us. It's like when people, you know, when you post tour dates, people always want to know why their city isn't on there. And it's like, I don't know. They didn't ask. So that's sort of how the touring stuff works.
Mm-hmm. And is it less expensive to tour in Europe? Because you guys tour in Europe a lot. I mean, at least Frontline Assembly and Delirium.
Well, we don't. Delirium's only, I think, ever played in Europe once. I think it's not like we tour a lot. We do festivals because there's a lot of festivals over there. So you really just kind of get it together to go do a couple shows and come back. So that's more of what it is. Yeah, it's not like we do a lot of heavy touring. I mean, there were some Frontline shows early this year, but they're usually built around a festival or two, and then you tack on a few other shows. But we haven't done like the old school touring like we used to do in a long time, which we, you know, we used to go for like 6 weeks and stuff like that. But, you know, that was then, you know.
So why festival in particular?
Because festivals pay well, because there's a lot of people in one place. So you get good guarantees. And when there's money, it makes everything more doable, like the flights, the production costs. That's really why. Because, you know, if you play a single club show, you know, it's hard to gauge how it's going to do. But these festivals, they kind of have a monopoly on that scene over there where, you know, they know there's going to be X amount of people there. And it's sort of easier to you know, to do the business part of it. So that's sort of how that works.
I understand. I mean, I get it. I know people are going to be asking, well, why do you do festivals and why don't you tour? So I just figured
behalf. Well, it's much easier for people to put together a festival than for someone to book a tour, because and the guys that do the festivals in Germany really have like a monopoly on a lot of that stuff. And in a lot of ways, it's actually hurt touring, because people don't go see the tours. They just go to the festival where all the bands they like are in one place on one day. And so that's sort of where things have gone, you know.
Yeah. And this is what I have, what it seems to me, that touring would just be absolutely exhausting. Is it as exhausting as it would appear to be?
I don't know. I mean, it depends. Like, if you have to fly all the time and you're always schlepping to the airport with your stuff, like when I do these little Conjure One things, it's kind of exhausting just because of the airport shuffle. But if you're like on a tour bus and you're going from city to city, I don't think it's exhausting at all. I mean, you're only like needed for 2 hours a day. I mean, I personally have never understood people that say, you know, especially when you're on a certain level, touring is not that hard at all. I mean, you know, you can technically sleep all day until sound check. It's like, if you're on a bus touring with a band, I don't think it's hard at all. I think when you got to, you know, carry your stuff around and schlep back and forth to airports, that's totally exhausting, you know.
Right.
But if you're in an established band and you're in a tour bus and you have, you know, a little bit of a road crew, and that's not exhausting. I mean, not to me. I mean, maybe to some people. And, you know, maybe people miss their families and things. There's always that part of it. But as far as exhausting, I can think of way more exhausting jobs than touring with a band.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I mean, I always thought it would be the opposite because, you know, you're on a plane, you get there faster, you're there.
No,
like, right now.
The flying sucks. The flying sucks because everything takes forever. It's like just getting to the airport takes forever. Getting in the security, it's just, you know, you add about 3 hours to every journey just with the airport. So that's the part
that makes
it exhausting.
I've always wondered, when you fly on tour, where's all your equipment?
Well,
How does that work?
You know, I do, the way I travel is I have everything in like three cases, you know, so I can carry one on and check the other two. So that's how I do it. But if you're a rock band, yeah, you couldn't do that. You know, that's why you'd have to be, you know, on a bus and things like, or in a van or something like that. But I mean, honestly, I would almost prefer a van to flying. I mean, the flying is just really takes it out of you. And you always have to get up really early to get to the airport. And, you know, you can never get out of a gig early. You know, you have to hang around, you have to wrap everything up. So it's not like you can go to bed early, you know? So that's the part that I find exhausting. But like when I was out with Frontline and we had a bus in March, that wasn't exhausting at all. It's like a holiday.
So when you're doing these shows with Conjure One, do you set it all up and break it down yourself?
Sometimes people help me. Sometimes there's kind people around.
Aww.
But on these small shows, I don't have a crew. I just do it myself. Yeah. And, you know, honestly, nowadays, I almost prefer doing it myself just because everything is a certain way. And, you know, I'm going to repack it the way, you know, the right way and everything. And, you know, I would have to have someone with me that would get into the rhythm of how it all goes, you know, so I don't mind doing it myself. You know, I mean, it's nice to have people help you get it off stage and stuff, but it's like, you know, I'm a real like gear tweaker. So I like to, you know, kind of handle a lot of it myself. So especially with this stuff I'm bringing for Conjure One, because I'm bringing like, you know, almost like a studio on stage. So.
I can understand now why you would think that would be more exhausting than actually touring. Yeah, I totally would get that.
Oh, it's way worse. It's way worse. It's like the one-off shows here and there, flying every day. That's exhausting. you know, but being in a band with a band on a tour bus with a couple crew guys, not exhausting. Exhausting usually for the more for the guys that aren't playing. They work harder. They're up later, they're schlepping stuff around. That's a worse job. You know. Road crew guys, that's exhausting.
So this Conjure One tour is really a labor of love for the fans.
I don't know, maybe. I mean, I enjoy playing the music and I like the music and I like people to hear it, you know. So I guess it is to some extent more so than a lot of other things, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so we kind of got off track because we were talking about the Mythology album and then somehow
yes.
We got back to Conjure One. I don't know.
Well, it was the touring. It was the touring part.
It was. But we want to play a song from Mythology called
yes.
Ritual. And I would love
mm-hmm.
for you to tell us a little bit about this song before we play it.
Okay, Ritual, actually, Jared, who plays with Frontline, the new incarnation of Frontline, actually submitted a couple tracks to Bill for, like, hey, I got these ideas. They might be cool for Delirium. So he sent them to Bill, who sent them to me, and we were like, this one's pretty cool. So we took the initial track, and we sort of did our thing to it, you know, added some more parts to it, added the strings. I think I added a bridge in the middle of the song, you know. And so it's a pretty, you know, collaborative piece with, you know, like three or four people working on the music. And Phil Dow Eng, who did the vocals, is this British vocalist that Bill had got in touch with. And they had actually already cut the vocals in Canada. And, you know, so we sort of had these vocals and these tracks, and then, you know, Bill sent everything down here and I kind of sort of cobbled it together and we all went back and forth on everything till we got it the way we liked it. And it ended up being a pretty cool song. I think Phil Dell had something, she had a song or something that was something to do with Apple that got a lot of listens, so... She's a pretty interesting vocalist and established in her own right.
All right. Well, let's take a listen. We're going to play Ritual from the Mythology album for you guys by Delirium. And here we go. Oh, All right. That was Ritual off of the new Mythology album from Delirium. And you can find that album on iTunes as well as Holocenic from Conjure One. And I would like to thank you, Reese, for coming on the show tonight. Really appreciate it. Had a good time.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
All right.
And
let's
I'm playing a show. I'm playing a show on the 7th in Palmer Lake, so check it out. It'll be cool.
Oh, that's right. I said the 8th, and it's the 7th. Is that wrong?
Yeah, it's the 7th. It's
okay.
It's Friday.
Okay, cool. I will have to come down there and say hi. I'll help you pack up your stuff.
Don't worry about it.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
So, thank you. Thank you so much for coming, Reese.
No problem.
All right. Night-night.
Bye.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to this edition of Rad Radio. I'm your host, Danny McMartin. Over and out.